Welcome to Foul Players Radio, your podcast for arts, entertainment, and pop culture. My name is Michael Spedden, your host. Every episode features interesting people with fun, fascinating stories about their journeys in the performing arts. Authors, actors, musicians, dancers, athletes, comics, you name it. Sit back, relax, and have a listen. Let's have some fun. Foul Players Radio is a proud production of the Foul Players Group and a proud member of the SJ Network. And welcome again to the quarantine edition of Foul Players Radio. My name is Michael Spedden, and today's guest is Jeff Dale. Jeff is an author from our neighbor to the north, Canada. He is the author of an upcoming book called Everything Shemp, a book about the life and career of Shemp Howard, which turns out to be a lot more than just the Three Stooges. He's also written a book about Larry Fine called The Fine Art of Boxing, No Stooge in the Ring. It's sort of a half-fact and half-fiction book based on the possibility of what if Larry Fine had chosen boxing over showbiz. A very interesting story, which is available electronically on Kindle, wherever you can buy books online. Subscribe for free to Foul Players Radio on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castro, CastBox, and iHeartRadio. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Jeff Dale right after these words. Hello, listeners. I've got some great news from one of our former guests. Barbara Bustard has just released a book called The Art of Healing, 12 step-by-step meditative art exercises for improved physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. Miss Bustard bares her soul and shows us who she is through her stories and exercises. This is a book to be felt and experienced, an artist's work. Art is a way to work through all that life gives us, whether it is happy, sad, or anything in between. Art is a creative, safe, healing, and everything special place. It is the place to work through the stress that underlies all disease. In her book, The Art of Healing, 12 step-by-step meditative art exercises for improved physical, mental, and spiritual well-being, Miss Bustard describes the process to make healing happen. The meditative exercises in this book are described in a very simple, clearly articulated manner. They are appropriate for any level of artistic experience. Just reading this book, Miss Bustard's exercises touch you at a feeling level. You are moved from your thinking analytical brain to creative expression. It is available now on Amazon for $29, and it's gotten many positive reviews from readers so far, so pick up your copy today. Her website is artforbodymindandsoul.com. Also remember, the holidays are just around the corner. We all love to support our local small businesses and artists. Make sure you get your copy today. It makes a great gift. Foul Players Radio is now a proud affiliate of the SJ Network. If you're a performer, an actor, musician, filmmaker, author, you name it, in need of a good publicist, call Steve Joyner, 816-605-4561, or you can email him at stevesjnetwork@gmail.com. He has many years of experience in the entertainment business. He's competent, confident, and takes great care of his clients. He would be the publicist for you. Call Steve at 816-605-4561 or stevesjnetwork@gmail.com.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Chris Rastali of Breaking the Fourth Wall. If you enjoy our show, you can find it on YouTube. Just look up Realm of the Mist Entertainment, or just look up Realm of the Mist Entertainment on Anchor.fm, Apple iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, or wherever quality podcasts can be heard. And also, you can find us on all the social medias. Just look for Realm of the Mist Entertainment, and I will catch you on the other side.
I'm Michael, the host of the semi-monthly podcast, In a City Like Yours. Join me as I chat with interesting people with interesting life stories. You can listen to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. You can follow us on Twitter at IACLYS Podcast, as well as on Facebook and Instagram at In a City Like Yours Podcast. Please feel free to let me know what you think, and keep coming back for the many interesting stories in a city like yours.
Hey, this is Don Smith from the Life Radio Show. If you've always wanted to learn more about the world of low-budget filmmaking and even lower-budget comedy, tune into the Life Radio Show. You can live stream the show at WWSU1069.org on Tuesdays from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern, or find us wherever you find podcasts and like and follow the Life Radio Show on Facebook for live video and other shenanigans.
Hey, what's up? This is Christopher Stolle of Realm of the Mist Entertainment. The podcast you are listening to is part of the SJ Network. Go to s-j-network.com. That's s-j-network.com for more great podcasts and information on those shows, as well as information and ability to contact publicist Steve Joyner for more information. Just go to the website and check out the family. Ladies and gentlemen, until then, enjoy the show.
So, Jeff Dale, welcome to Foul Players Radio. I'm excited to talk to you today. It seems like you've got a lot of great information and some very interesting things to tell us about your new book coming out, Everything Shimp. So, welcome.
Thank you. It's great to be with you today, Mark.
Right, so, you're up in the Great White North and up in Canada is where you live. And you've been a Three Stooges fan for many years. And you're currently writing a book about Shemp Howard, who was... one of the Howard brothers, and he had, kind of started with the Stooges and ended with the Stooges, the earlier years on film and then the later years on film, and of course, vaudeville. So tell us about, you've just got this gigantic volumes and volumes of information. I'm not even sure where to start asking. So since you're writing the book, I think you would know what would make most sense. So go ahead.
Okay. Thanks very much, Mike. I'll do my best. It's been sort of a book, for me anyway, it's been something I've wanted to do for a long time, and I knew there has never been a book written on Shemp. I mean, there's a lot of the Stooges, there's even individual books by Moe, and books on Larry, books on Curly, but Shemp always seemed, somehow to fly behind, underneath the radar, and the reality is, as you probably well know, he was really a member of the original group that became the Stooges. It was Ted Healy who sort of needed some Stooges to sort of back him up, give him some support. And the two originals, of course, were Shemp and his younger brother, Moe. And then Larry was out a little later. Never became the Three Stooges in terms of when Shemp was with them, but the actual original group that became the Stooges did feature Shemp. And a lot of people, including myself, call him the original Stooge. And so he's got a fascinating, fascinating background, both as a solo person, a solo artist, and as a member of the Stooges. So that's what I've been doing for the last 4 years.
Wow. That's a lot of work to put a book together like that, because, gathering all this information and verifying your sources and making sure that what you're going to put out is correct. I'm sure there's a lot of variation because, you have different people, different versions of things that happened. And, an example, you could have a bunch of people on the corner of a city block witness a fender bender and you get 20 different stories. And I guess you really kind of have to use your skills to really realize, to really figure out what's the truth. And I guess this is, a really big, mystery, a good fact-finding mission as well. So I'm sure it's very gratifying, too.
It is, because most of my writing life, and that dates back to, about 1972, so that does make me quite old. I've been a newspaper reporter, and I've done some broadcasting for the National Radio Network up here, the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
Right.
My main sort of interest all during those years was I always liked to do entertainment writing.
Oh, yeah.
I did a lot of business things and politics and whatever. But entertainment always fascinated me. So, the Stooges, when we moved from England back in 1955, that was something I was sort of, my parents, sort of shuddered at the thought, oh, my God, not the Stooges, all that violence and all that. And, of course, in other words, when the Stooges sort of came out, or at least their Stooge shorts were released for syndication through television and such. That was sort of the way to sneak in a little view now and then of the Three Stooges. And Curly, Larry, and Moe, as they were mainly, that was what the mainly what the sort of emphasis was on. I got to get a little sneak now and then at Shemp, and he always, unlike some people, he always fascinated me. So the fact that all these years later, I got a chance to write, or at least I'm writing the first book on Shemp, that's a real thrill. And it's been a lot of work, like you said, but getting the facts right. I talked to the Howard family, the surviving members, absolutely wonderful people. The granddaughters, Jill and Sandy, and the daughter-in-law, Jerry, fascinating. They come up with some wonderful, fascinating things. So talking to them, I actually went to Los Angeles from Canada. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful people. And, like I said, it's an incredibly interesting story, and I'm just hoping when it's all said and done and the book is out there, it's going to be published sometime early next year, I'm hoping, probably around maybe spring. I just want people to say, wow, I really didn't know that about Shemp. That's kind of the goal of this whole book, I think.
Right. Because the thing is that a lot of times, you know, people don't realize that, you know, he was gosh, I mean, looking at his credits, I mean, if you ever just even look at his credits on IMDb, and I have seen a bit of these, you know, I can't say I've looked at the whole list or I've seen the whole list, but he really performed and backed up some big dogs. You know, he performed with, you know, Lon Chaney Jr. He performed with Abbott and Costello quite a bit, you know, the Andrews sisters. And, you know, just it seems like almost if you look at it in baseball terms, a good utility man, you know, just... You know, a lot, very skilled, you know, could come in at just about all occasions and just did a great job. And I guess, you know, if he didn't, he wouldn't be have gotten casted so much, right?
That's true. And it's interesting because obviously the early days, the vaudeville and on stage, this was all the result of Ted Healy, who was an incredibly popular, very, very well-known comedian, actor, sort of host, you name it. Healy did it all. And so let's give credit where it's due. An absolutely fascinating figure, and he was responsible for so much of the early work that Shemp did on stage with Healy, and of course also Shemp's younger brother Mo, and a little later Larry. Great works like A Night in Venice, A Night in Spain, performed on Broadway. I mean, you know, this is no small stuff. Huge. Broadway was huge then, and it's huge now. But when he got outside, when he basically left the trio at that time, and Curly took over, that was when the movie situation really opened up for Shemp. And I should say, before he left Healy, they actually did come out with a film called Soup to Nuts. That was a film basically focusing on Ted Healy. And, of course, in the movie were Shemp, Moe, and Larry. And they actually made, I think, from the reports I've read, they sort of almost made a bigger impression than anyone in the film. Not that they were the stars, but they were noticed and offered work. But they left, and Shemp went out on his own, and that's where it sort of started.
Right. Now, look, can I ask you, I wanted to ask you a question about these early days with Ted Healy. There have been a lot of accounts out there, you know, about how god-awful it was for them to work with Ted Healy, how there was actually real hitting in the vaudeville, and I had heard one person say, one source said that, you know, the reason he really slugged them was because they had to hear it in the last row, and then that, you know, just a lot of negative things about Ted Healy. But I'd heard some accounts that some of the stuff may not have been true. What do you think about this? Have you found that to be the truth or not?
Well, I'll be perfectly honest. A friend down in California, also an author, really good author, Bill Cassara, wrote a book on the true story of Ted Healy, and it really is fascinating. I would say literally 95% of the horror stories you hear about Healy, maybe more than 95%, they're just not true. They're exaggerated. It was a tough time, you know. Vaudeville, you know, the slapping and hitting and that. I mean, they all did it. Every single one of them. It was part of the act. It was a rough business. You took your lumps and bumps. Mm-hmm. There were no stuntmen. And Healy had his own personal demons. But I personally think that if it were not for Healy, there would be no Three Stooges.
Right.
And who knows?
Okay.
Maybe there wouldn't even been a Shemp on his own. So I think you got to take it with a grain of salt. I'm not doing a plug here for Bill.
Sure.
But I mean, that is a fascinating book. Mm-hmm. If you can get a hold of that, and you'll really see what sort of went into it. You know, they all had their quirks. Mm-hmm. They all had their sort of oddities. But he got them gigs. He
sure,
got them
sure.
well known. Mm-hmm. And Curly, Larry, Moe, Shemp, you name it. Ted Healy had a huge, huge impact. And it would have been fascinating to be a fly on the wall, courtesy of a time machine, of course, to be back there and watch it. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the stories about him being physically abusive behind the scenes and pulling all sorts of dangerous pranks are not true. Mm-hmm. And of course, the internet, that sort of magnifies those stories. So
right,
you have to
right.
be very, very careful about what is actually true and what isn't true.
That's interesting. And one interesting thing that you said was, you know, there were no special effects and stuntmen, I guess, when you're doing live shows. And I had also had heard about how Buster Keaton had gotten his nickname. When he was doing vaudeville as a child, they would literally throw him into the audience when he was about 5 years old, and he would land on whatever was there, and he would just get back up and continue acting. So I guess maybe that was just the way of the world at the time.
Well, that's interesting you should mention Buster Keaton, because I read a story not too long ago, not so much a factual story, more an opinion piece, about the 10 greatest sort of macho stuntmen of all time who are, you know, people who did their own stunts, et cetera, et cetera. They listed all the ones you'd expect, you know, Schwarzenegger, Stallone, people like that. But at the top of the list, guess who was there? Buster Keaton.
Was that right?
He did all his stunts, and boy, some of them were dangerous.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've had some experience as an actor, just with some minor stunts, with all the precautions that are taken nowadays, you know, because of things like SAG and, you know, just things that are, you know, common procedures. And I can just imagine what things were like back in those days when, you know, they didn't have a lot of the technology to protect you, you know, nowadays, you know, like, you know, knee pads and elbow pads and things to land on and everything. I mean, I guess if you were a stuntman back then, you had to jump 30 feet. You had to jump 30 feet, and that was about it. I mean, I'm sure some precautions were taken, but I'm sure these guys were probably pretty hard and pretty tough to be able to do those things.
And let's face it, you know, the Stooges in particular, and also Buster Keaton, they weren't exactly what you can consider big men. I mean, Shemp is also sort of in a half jokingly sort of way, always referred to as the tallest of those three Howard brothers. It seems to be, depending on which bio you look at, he's anywhere from 5'5 to 5'7.
Mm-hmm.
Curly comes in at about 5'5 to 5'6. And Larry and Moe, you got 5'3, 5'4.
Right.
So, not exactly giants. I mean, I can't talk. I'm only 5'9 myself.
Sure, sure, sure.
I would have been fairly big compared to those guys. But tough. Tough as nails, all of them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I can just see watching some of the older shorts and everything. And this is kind of coming from my perspective. I'm 6'6".
And, oh, okay. You're a big guy.
Yeah. I end up getting those parts, you know, when I act a lot of times. And I've seen, you know, when I stand up straight up and down, you know, I'm about as tall as the standard doorway. And when I look at a lot of these older movies with, you know, the Three Stooges, you know, they go, and they go running out the door away from somebody. I see them run over to the door, and the doorknob's always about chest high as compared to waist high to me. And
right.
They go running out the doorway. And a lot of times, too, even, you know, they were, you know, doing their bits, and then, you know, somebody would come in to reprimand them. And usually, it was, you know, sometimes it was a woman, sometimes it was a man. They were always shorter than the people that were coming in to reprimand them, you know? So, and I guess that may have been just part of what made them funny. You know, but somebody would always come in and, you know, they would reprimand them. They'd be looking up at the person, they'd be looking down at them, and then something else would happen. But, yeah, I did notice that about them. They were not big guys at all.
No, And, you know, it's really funny when we were talking to initially about the work with Healy, that's incredibly fascinating. It's really too bad a lot of that doesn't exist. You know, you've got the odd film now and then, and of course, Soup to Nuts, I've got that. Soup to Nuts, by the way, it says featuring the Three Stooges. Of course, they weren't the Three Stooges at the time. They were either the Racketeers or the Southern Gentlemen. So those are the two names most commonly referred to with the original trio, Ted Healy and his Racketeers, or Ted Healy and his Southern Gentlemen. But what fascinates me about Shemp, which a lot of people, and you brought this up, don't realize, he appeared, and this is to date because it sometimes changes, in 105 films as a solo actor.
Yes, yes.
That's incredible. I mean, that's, you know, and that's in addition to the 77 or approximately solo shorts that he did when he rejoined the Stooges. So that's one busy, you know, that's a working actor.
Right,
that's
right.
In my feeling, is the working actor. And what I love about it is, the very first film that was released when he went to Vitaphone, who does he appear with? Jack Healy. And
right.
Like, literally, 4 or 5 years later, this was in 33, so a few years down the road, Jack Haley's the Tin Man. You know? They were busy working actors, but that's one of the people he appeared with. That's the very first film that was released. The ninth month, the 16th day of 1933, there was Shemp on film with Jack Haley, and it's fascinating. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I could see. And then also, too, I mean, we'd mentioned earlier, too, you know, appearing with Lon Chaney Jr., who you know, did a lot of monster movies and things back then, but it had also appeared in a number of other things, you know, like Of Mice and Men with Burgess Meredith, had a good performance in that one. And a number of other ones too. And I think what I had heard mentioned is the two of them were kind of paired together as a comedy team. Is that correct?
Yeah, a lot of people, when talking about them, suggest or even state that they were sort of paired with a mind to being a little bit like Abbott and Costello.
Right.
And in fact, I've read on some accounts, they call it a faux Abbott and Costello, you know, F-A-U-X. I don't think it was as bad as that. I thought there were some good lines. I thought the movie they appeared in, by the way, was San Antonio Rose. And I thought it was pretty decent. You know, not all pairings work. But a lot of the stuff with Shemp, like with Lon Chaney Jr., I tell you, when he was with Vitaphone, it's some fascinating stuff. Here's one for you. In 1934, they hired this completely unknown fellow, never appeared in any films in his life, James Stewart.
Yes.
The first movie he ever made, he was appearing in a Shemp Howard short.
Wow, okay.
So, Jimmy Stewart, you know, I mean, there's one there. And And there is another interesting one. Shemp appeared in a few, you know, independent films too during his early years, and one of them is absolutely fascinating for me. It was a Falcon production. It's called Convention Girl. Not exactly what I call a great film. It was made after the code for the ethics, you know, and decency in film was sort of passed. So it was a little on the tame side, but Shemp, he plays a gangster. No jokes at all. He's dressed up sort of as a small-time hood in Atlantic City. And he's, you know, he's a cheat, he's a thief, and he tries to murder his partner. So if anyone really wants to get a glimpse of Shemp, and I think, quite frankly, he's the highlight of the film, catch Convention Girl. It came out in 1935. It's fascinating. See Shemp with a, you know, a one of those sort of fedoras on. He's got a gun with him.
Right.
I believe he was smoking a cigarette. And like I said, not a great movie. But I tell you what, fascinating. He could do some drama. With a little bit of coaching, I think he could have been a pretty decent dramatic actor, too.
Sure. Yeah. And so many people just associate them, you know, with the hitting and the slapping and the making, you know, weird noises and, you know, corny humor and everything. But, you know, he really did have a lot of ability as an actor, you know, with the ad lib and being able to perform well in a lot of situations. You know, he was definitely very versatile, and I think a lot more skilled than a lot of people give him credit for. A lot of times, and especially too, and I hate to say this, you know, that I think, you know, kind of going back to what you said earlier, you know, whenever the Three Stooges would come on when I was a kid, you know, what was the universal thing mom always said to every boy that watched them? Turn that off. You know, turn that off. What are you watching? What are these nuts doing on TV? It seems like that a lot of the, you know, Three Stooges did have more of an appeal to boys than girls growing up. You know, a lot of, you know, friends of mine that liked them, you know, were boys. You know, we used to watch them, and the girls always thought, now, what are you watching that for? But there was a lot more. I mean, they had a lot more ability to do things other than just slap and hit and make silly noises, like I mentioned earlier, you know?
Right. And it is interesting because you mentioned some interesting folks that he appeared alongside. And admittedly, I mean, you know, they were not huge roles, but sometimes he had a nice sizable chunk of the film. And I could name a few people, like you said, Abbott Costello, I don't know, five or six films there. Mm-hmm. W.C. Fields in The Bank Dick.
Yes,
he played
yes.
Mm-hmm. Great stuff. John Barrymore in an Invisible Woman film. Murder Over New York, that was a Charlie Chan film. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think, he was in with Brian Donlevy in a Behind Prison Gates. I mean, he had one line, but it was a classic line. It just goes on. And, of course, the one that fascinates me the most is, of course, one of his neighbors was John Wayne. So John Wayne used to drive him to the studio because Shemp didn't drive. Because, guess why? Because he was in a film with John Wayne called Pittsburgh. And he's got a nice little bit. He plays a tailor, someone, you know, makes suits and whatever. And you can imagine him size up fitting John Wayne, again, you know, your size, you know, 6'4", 6'5", and down there, you know, dusting the Duke off. And they had wonderful chemistry. It was absolutely wonderful. So there he was in a movie with Randolph Scott, John Wayne, and Marlene Dietrich.
Wow.
I mean, that's fascinating. And he appeared in some stuff with members of the Bowery Boys. In fact, one of his films is very interesting. I believe it's called Heading East. That was a Columbia film. Very, very minor role. He's not even credited. Leo Gorshi, who is the lead of the Bowery Boys, he plays sort of a young, I tell him a juvenile, basically, and Shemp in this particular film. He's sort of a manager of a gym for youth, and he's in there sparring with Leo. Now, nowadays, when you see this film advertised for sale, you'll see it says starring Buck Jones, Shemp Howard, and Leo Gorshi. Well, Leo's not even billed, actually. But it's a nice little flick. And this is another interesting part about Shemp. He had a lifelong love affair with boxing. He absolutely adored it. And some of his best films, in fact, I think one of his best films with the Stooges was his return to the group. It was called Fright Night. And guess what the topic is? Boxing. And I'll tell you, anytime is any boxing talk and his wonderful sort of Shemp, sort of a Shemp version of the Ali Shuffle in a way. If boxing is involved and Shemp's in the film, whether it's Stooges or whether it's one of his films, like, for example, the great Joe Palooka series, Shemp is absolutely on top of the game. That's the way you marry your love of a sport or something like that with what you do for a living. And he absolutely was top-notch doing that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. Yeah, you're right. You're right. I agree. You know, with this, I mean, you know, and like we were just kind of, you know, saying before too, with him, you know, having all these character parts and everything, the way things were, I guess, in Hollywood back then, you know, having this long list, I mean, you know, between the Stooges and everything else, it looks like it's about 180 credits. You know, he wouldn't have gotten all that work, and he must have been very, very highly respected behind the scenes, you know, by people, that, you know, they had, you know, they wanted him. you know, there must have been a demand for him, and I'm sure his directors and everybody else, you know, he must have had a good reputation with these folks to keep getting asked back for these things. You know, if he was just some goofball that made noises and slapped people, I don't think he would have lasted very long, as I think they would have seen through it. And with that, with there not being as many outlets back in those days for, you know, movies and things like that, and, you know, only certain people really made it, you know, I mean, I think that's really a testament to his true talent and, you know, what they saw him as bringing to the table. Do you agree?
Well, absolutely, and one person I think that I would think anyway that his opinion it would be extreme would be Bud Abbott from Abbott Costello. He told a reporter once, and it's sort of a backhanded compliment in a way, but anyway, it's meant to show you how much the two of them, him and Lou Costello, felt about Shemp. He said, "You know, Shemp Howard is one of the best comedians around in the business today. Mm-hmm. The only problem is those god-awful shorts that he appears in all the time." Mm-hmm. And these were like some of the Columbia shorts. The bottom line is what Abbott was saying, and I think it's very clear, is that a lot of the time, Shemp was absolutely far, far superior to the work that some of the studio heads gave him.
Yep.
You know, sort of secondary work that anyone could do. But when you see him in something he was good, you say to yourself, you know, my word, this guy is really talented. Mm-hmm. He knows he's a good physical comedian. He's got this, as you pointed out, he's got sort of an almost elastic kind of face, great with the facial expressions, and as an ad-libber. And some directors, not all, but some directors took great advantage of that. Just sort of let him go. You know, let them fly loose with a few ad-libs. So, you know, for those people who think that ad-libbing and off-the-cuff remarks is sort of the monopoly of today's comedians, and a lot of them, it didn't begin there. Mm-hmm. It's people back in those days, you know, the Shemp Howards, the greats, you know, they it was part of what they did. It was part of the shtick.
Right.
And it was always a pleasure to watch him. And I tell you, I always do. There's sort of a running gag amongst Stooge and or Shemp fans. It's that they phone up their buddy the next morning and say, "You'll never guess what movie I saw Shemp Howard in last night." That's it. Start of a conversation.
Yeah. Interesting. Jeff, we're going to have to take a short break here to run a couple of promos. So what we'll do is we're just going to take a second, hold your thought, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Jeff Dale, author, on Foul Players Radio, and we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Hey everybody, it's John Orlando from the PBD Cast. Are you wondering where you can find my podcast? Well, it's real simple. Just go over to pvdcast.com, the online home of yours truly, or it's available through all of those major podcasting platforms. Just search for it in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, iHeartRadio app. And don't forget that every single Monday night at 8 o'clock, I do a live broadcast of the week's episode of the PVDcast through the Facebook page. Just go over to facebook.com and search for at PVDcast and join me every Monday night at 8 p.m. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. So I'll chat at each and every one of you later.
Howdy, it's Matt Gwynn here, popping in to let you know about the adventures of the albino rhino. It's a show Frank the Giraffe here, my co-host James Godwin, and myself put on for you guys twice a week. Every Wednesday, we talk to a comedian, and every Friday, we call it Freak Yeah Friday. The show itself is not safe for work, and that freak is definitely a different word. I just don't know what podcast you're going to be listening to this promo on. And I don't want to, start screaming explicatives while you're sitting in your office, if you're lucky enough to have been able to go back to the work that you did before inside of an office or whatever, you know. But we go on an adventure twice a week, and it's a good time because we get to sit down and talk to some really cool people. And I enjoy it because, you know, I'm just curious little albino who likes to get to know folks, you know? You can find us a couple ways, actually multiple ways, really. Man, there's a lot of different ways to find us. You can find us through our central hub, which is www.albinorhino.me. It's the website. Find me on. And then, you know, the podcast, you can find the videos on YouTube. Search for Adventures of the Albino Rhino. Also linkable from our website. And you can also find us through Anchor, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Overcast, Radio Public, and Spotify. That's right. We're on the same place Joe Rogan is. Granted, we're not the Joe Rogan Experience, but you know what I mean? We're there. So give us a listen. Promise you won't be dissatisfied. And enjoy your day.
What is going on, minions? Mike here for Misery Point Radio, and you're listening to the Coast to Coast Power Hour on the SJ Network. Now, I know what you're thinking. Mike, what the F is a Coast to Coast Power Hour? Well, my uneducated and uninformed friend, the Coast to Coast Power Hour is a Borg-like collective of epic podcasters from epic podcasts that have all come together to discuss the important things in life. Pop culture, current events, random awesomeness, stuff like that. Trust me, you need this in your life. For more information on this show and all the shows on the Coast to Coast Power Hour, as well as on the SJ Network, reach out to publicist Steve Joyner at www.s-j-network.com or stevesjnetwork@gmail.com. No need to thank me. I'm just out here, you know, changing lives.
What's Your Effin' Binge is a podcast brought to you by Chris, Anchor, and Spotify. And what we talk to our guest about is what they're currently binge-watching on TV. And what we do is we like to take a different approach. I don't want to know what the name of the show is that they're going to talk about before they come on. I have to actually guess it. So I ask them who, what, when, where, why, and try to figure out what it is that they're watching. A lot of times I'm able to guess it, and sometimes I'm not. And that's fine. That adds to the comedy of the show. We like to bring our guest on, whether they're a model or an actress or a producer or musician, and just let them have a platform to be able to tell everybody what they have coming up next, and also entertain everybody with what's worth watching. So I hope everybody tunes in for the next episode of What's Your Effin' Binge. Thanks. It's Chris.
And we're back with Jeff Dale talking to us about his upcoming book, Everything Shemp, about the life and times and career of Shemp Howard. So you had a few more facts you wanted to bring up about Shemp. Let's tell us. Yeah, this has been a very interesting interview so far. You know, we're all learning a lot of things maybe we didn't know about him. But go ahead.
Well, it's interesting, you know. They all had their own sort of, I don't know, away from the screen, what they were like. Shemp was always known as a real family man. I mean, he absolutely loved his son, Mort, and his wife, who is known, we'll just call her Babe. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he just loved it. I mean, off the screen, there was, you know, it was family. That's what he did. He tinkered around on the piano. He did some fishing. He played with his son and had just a grand time. But his wife, Babe, and himself, they used to hold these parties every week for his celebrity friends. And they were just fascinating, the people he had, that they had there. You know, John Wayne might occasionally drop by. Jimmy Stewart, I was led to believe, was there on a couple of occasions. Martha Ray, whom he appeared in the movie Hell's a Poppin'. Just an incredible man. And one very good friend of his from the Stooge films, Vernon Dent, mm-hmm. who was also a wonderful singer, David Dent. great get-together. Babe was a phenomenal cook, apparently. Mm-hmm. All these people roaming around the house, their kids, Lou Costello would be there. And that sort of ends some of the nonsense about this there being some bad feelings between Abbott and Costello and the Three Stooges. Just absolutely mm-hmm. not true. So these parties, they went on. All the people that get together, they'd be singing, they'd be telling jokes, and that was something he loved to do. Shemp just loved to entertain people. And when he died, I mean, this is another interesting point about, he sort of lived for, other than his family and his work, he lived for the boxing ring, always around boxing. And sure enough, on the night of November 22nd, 1955, on the way back from one of his fight nights, he collapsed in the car with his friends in the back of a taxi. Head went down, he just lit up a cigar, head went down onto the lap of one of his friends, and they thought, of course, this was part of a joke. And he was dead. The newspapers reported there was a heart attack, but I believe it was something more technical, and I don't have the technical term. Cerebral hemorrhage, I believe it was.
Like an aneurysm.
Anyway, sorry?
Maybe an aneurysm?
Yeah, I think it was cerebral hemorrhage, but anyway,
okay.
He was only 60.
Yeah.
And, I think so many more years were left in his career. But, and according to, I said, when I was talking to his daughter-in-law, Jerry, she said, I was talking, with Milton Berle, and I was talking about Shemp passing away, and he said, when I was talking to him, he said there were tears dropping down Milton Berle's face. He was that upset. And so he was respected. I mean, I genuinely think that people loved him. A lot of the Bowery Boys, I've talked to the sons of some of the Bowery Boys, like Hunt Hall's son and Gabe Delson's son. And they basically said, Shemp was it to them. He was the epitome, his expressions, his just everything. And there was a lot of... I don't say copying, but Hansel, got a lot from Shemp.
Oh,
and
sure.
And some of his acting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, this is all very interesting here, and I'm sure, like you said, you don't want to give away the store, but I'm sure our listeners have been just really fascinated just hearing all these facts that you have and all this information about Shemp Howard. So we can definitely expect your book to be out sometime in the spring of 21. Is that your goal?
Yes, that's my goal. I mean, my goals have changed over the past 4 years because something has come up, and either me being popped into the hospital for a kidney stone operation or two, and things like that delayed things. And of course, the facts would come up, and another movie would appear that he was in. So I'm trying desperately. I think that all the things that are going on in the world today, if I can be a little bold and say, I think folks could use a bit of a laugh, a bit of an interesting read about someone they may not know very much about. And even if you're a Stooge fan or you're not a Stooge fan, you're a man, you're a woman, you're a kid, you're an old geezer like myself, I'm hoping that this is going to sort of fill the need in these kind of stressful times. Just sit back and have a little read about Shemp. And if the mood strikes you, maybe you can... find out where you can buy a couple of the Shemp films and have a boo. Take
Absolutely.
A look at Shemp fitting the Duke, the 6'5" Duke with a nice suit. I think you'll get a laugh out of it. I really hope so.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, and that's another thing, too. I see all the guests that I've been fortunate enough to have on my show as treasures, bringing forward these stories about show business. This is an important part of our heritage. Of course, we have other parts of our history, political and economic and, this, that, and the other thing. But a big part of our heritage is our show business history, because it's been one of the biggest industries in this country for many, many decades. And, people that just bring these stories forward, positive stories, things that you may not have known, they're very, very interesting, and they definitely have a place. I think a lot of these things should be archived. And then with you coming on and, your history with writing and all the research that you're doing, I believe these stories really need to be told. And I also agree, without, you know, I believe for everybody out there, this has just been, particularly in 2020, just a very, very stressful year. You know, my podcast and the guests that I have on, you know, I choose to have this to be something, as they say in Piano Man, to forget about life for a while, something to escape, something to bring some good cheer, and just to bring some calm over folks, because, you know, again, it's a very worrisome, you know, troublesome time that we're in right now, and I'm just hoping to be a help to get through it, you know, an ambassador of goodwill and good cheer, and we're just hoping that, you know, life gets better for people. So, again, thank you again for being here. You know, I would like to also talk about your other book, you know, that you have out, that is Three Stooges related and also boxing related. And this is sort of a hybrid fiction and nonfiction book. A fiction book, I guess you could say, based on fact is how you put it. It's called The Fine Art of Boxing, No Stooge in the Ring. And it's a book about Larry Fine. And a lot of people don't realize that he was actually in boxing before he got into performing and acting. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's an interesting story, very much so. And unfortunately, it's not available in print. But I believe if you go to, I'm guessing it's Amazon, you can get it as an ebook. Essentially, Larry, who is then Louis Feinberg, grew up in South Philadelphia. His father was a jeweler. He was in his dad's workshop one day. He saw something which he thought was some soda pop, and sadly it wasn't. It was some acid that his father used in his trade as a jeweler. Mm-hmm. He picked it up, and his father quickly grabbed something, hurled it across the room, knocking the acid out of his hand, but it sprayed all over his son's arm. At a very young age, of course, and so, well, let's let you ask another question, but let's just say that was the lead-in to Larry's first touches with boxing.
Hmm. Interesting. And yeah, he was, I guess, from what you were telling me, he probably wasn't a heavyweight. I'm guessing he was what size would he have been, a lightweight or a middle?
Yes, he was a lightweight. Again, we're talking a man who's, well, you know, 5'3". I don't even know at that point, because he was so young, maybe even smaller than that. So you're talking the 125, 130 range.
That's about right, I would say.
And the issue was, the thing was, basically, they had gone to one doctor. One doctor had suggested an amputation of his arm. Mm. So that was a no-no as far as his parents were concerned. Went to another doctor. He suggested strengthening the arm, and there were two ways. One would have been to do some, interestingly enough, music. So he took up the violin, and by the way, he got very good at the violin.
Yes, he did.
Another one was sports. So I think the choices, if I recall correctly, would have been tennis, golf, or boxing. Mm-hmm. Boxing, because you know you use your arms a lot. And oddly enough, of course, boxing at that time, by the way, was a huge sport, which I think probably challenged baseball in terms of popularity. And it also was a time then when the Jewish boxers were at the top of their game. Mm-hmm. People like Benny Leonard, you know, there's a lightweight for you. And so he chose boxing. Now, the understanding was with his parents, okay, you're going to do that, but you're just doing training. You know, you're doing workouts, you know, sort of the heavy bags, some skipping, you know, road work. You're not going in the ring. That was sort of understood. Jewish parents did not like their sons becoming boxers.
Sure.
But, give me a little hint, Kid Roth was born. And that was a way to keep the secret from his parents. Now, guess who was doing some boxing and doing pretty good at it?
Yeah.
That was Kid Roth, also known as Louis Feinberg.
Right. Interesting. So he got into the ring, and apparently he was pretty good.
He was. Like that. That's another thing, too. I checked every single available sports archive, news archive throughout Philadelphia. I went down to Philadelphia. No one can find that. Boxing experts have been trying to find out all about his fights. I suspect a lot of them being sort of on an undercard were never really covered, or at least they were covered but never reported upon. So there's no real record. So that's where the fiction comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, that's the fact that I've told you. The fiction part of the book is that I just made up a lot of his opponents, not their names. I actually had him fighting some well-known fighters of the day.
Mm-hmm.
I made up the scenario, and I just sort of had some fun with it. It was just a fun book to write. Mm-hmm. And it always fascinated me because, you know, when you think of the Three Stooges, you think about Mo slapping people around and that. Mm-hmm. Yet, so the guy who actually brought up in his youth that he was a boxer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit of a twist, a little bit of irony, I think.
Right, right. I can imagine that. You're exactly what you said there. Yeah, a little bit of irony. He was the actual boxer who did it, you know.
and also, like you've seen him play violin,
mm-hmm.
Disorder in the Court, I think, was one of them where he's playing the violin. And he was good at it. And when he was very young, he did a solo with the junior orchestra, not the main one, the Philadelphia Junior Orchestra or Symphony. I don't know what it was actually called. And so he was good. He was very good, in fact. So there you have Larry. He's the middle of the Stooges, you know, and doesn't get as much attention, unfortunately, because I think he's very, very funny. But he was also a boxer. And he was also a violinist. And to tie in with Shemp, quite frankly, when Shemp replaced Curly, Larry got much more of a role. And he was less just sort of reacting, but a lot more proactive sort of input into the Stooge shorts. So, interesting man, you know?
Right.
Some good career points and a fascinating fellow.
Right. Now, did you get any feedback from any relatives of him that maybe have, you know, remembered him? I mean, I guess they probably weren't around over 100 years ago, I guess, when he would have been boxing. But did any of his grandchildren or anything reach out to you or say anything about the book?
I did talk to one of his grandchildren and one of the grandsons. And the information just isn't there. That's unfortunate.
Right.
Although, I should mention, what is interesting is that this particular grandson, Eric, I believe, and he, in fact, went with a couple of family members and Shemp to the fights in Los Angeles. So a little bit of a tie there, you know. That's one thing I would have really wanted to find out was whether Larry and Shemp ever talked much about boxing.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't get that from anyone. I would have thought it would have been fascinating because Shemp is an absolute fanatic on the fight game.
Sure.
And his early years, Larry is part of the fight game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you would think that they probably had a lot to talk about, and, you know, Shemp would have known a lot about what Larry had done, and, you know, probably would have looked to Larry as a good source while he was watching all these things, you know, having a... You know, it's like watching football on every week and having a former player with you and just to get their perspective on how things are going on the field and what all that was like, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Larry, I mean, you know, it's kind of interesting in a way, and I want to make this clear to all Stooge people out there because Stooge people can get a little bit upset if you sort of suggest that you don't like the other ones as much. I like all of them. I like all of them for their input.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that all six men at some point mm-hmm. basically are part of helping to maintain the history of the Stooges, which is almost 100 years now. Because,
yeah.
You know, the formulation of the Stooges, the embryonic Stooges, was back in around 1923. So mm-hmm. we're coming up to 100 years. I don't favor any of the... I like everything they've sort of inputted into the group. But I tend to gravitate at times towards Shemp and Larry.
Right.
That's my focus. And because I just think they're fascinating. They don't quite get as much publicity, but I think they're every bit as important.
Oh, absolutely.
They all are.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, even I'd seen, you know, a couple of movies. They did make a movie a number of years back that had, I think, Michael Chiklis and John Cassier in it. And
yes.
I can't remember who played the rest of them. But when it got towards the end, and I guess we were probably maybe getting into the 60s and early 70s, they had a quote at the end with Joe Derita, who was probably the last, you know, Curly Joe, I believe. He was probably one of the last ones that wasn't original, you know, because they had, you know, Joe Besser and then, so Curly Joe Derita, he said that his years in performing with the Stooges were probably his fondest memories of show business.
That's understandable. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting you should bring that up, because there's a TV movie made in 2000, which was produced by Mel Gibson, mm-hmm. who's a big Stooge fan. That's a little bit controversial, because there's a very, very divided opinion on how good the film was. Mm-hmm. However, the actor who played Shemp was John Cassier. Mm-hmm. I think people know him from playing the Crypt Keeper. He voiced the Crypt Keeper on that TV series. And he absolutely loved being asked to play Shemp, mm-hmm. and just thoroughly enjoyed the whole experience. So mm-hmm. I think that was another one of his claim to fame, as well as being the Crypt Keeper.
Right.
At least he was also Shemp Howard. And who else has done that? I can't think of anyone.
I know. I enjoyed him in First and Ten, that HBO series from years ago where he played the kicker. I think his name was Zagreb something or other. And he does pop up and show up in different things, and I've always enjoyed his work.
He's very good. And I think he did, for all intents and purposes, again, there's mixed reaction both critically and popularly about that particular movie. Mm-hmm. But having said that, I think John did a very, very good role. I think he did a good job of mm-hmm. portraying Shemp.
Right.
That's not easy, you know?
Oh, yeah.
He's a unique character.
Right. Yeah, definitely very unique in everything. So, God, this has been really interesting talking to you today. I wish you all the best of luck with this project coming out. It seems like, you're just really having a fascinating time finding out all this information and investigating and getting all your facts together and, investigating all these stories. It just seems like, and I bet you just can't wait to when it's finally ready to be able to share it with everybody and have everybody see it or read it when it comes out. I'm very excited for you. I'm very happy for you. At this time, I'd like to give you an opportunity to go ahead and plug whatever you'd like to plug. This is shameless plug time here on Foul Players Radio.
Well, basically, what I can tell people is that the book is being published by Bear Manor Media, mm-hmm. and that particular company excels in producing and publishing books about entertainment, and an awful lot of it is about information that people just wouldn't know about. Bill Cassera's book, for example, mm-hmm. on Ted Healy. He's also written a book on Vernon Dent, and he's quite a prolific writer. It's fascinating. Ben, my publisher, we're in contact fairly regularly. So as soon as I get the information as to when it's going to be available, and both in the United States and up here in Canada, that will probably be me selling it to some people directly, I guess.
Right.
As soon as the information is available, bang-o, it'll be on Facebook, and you can rush out and get your copy.
Well, great.
Make it day, get away from all the doom and gloom and just sit back and mm-hmm. and sort of read a little bit about Shmuel Howard,
absolutely. Well, and like I said, when this comes out, feel free to come back and see us again and, tell us how things are going with the release of the book. And any projects that you have going forward, we'd be proud to have you back as a guest. I've enjoyed having you today, Jeff, and it's just been a great time. So thank you for being here, Jeff, and thank you all for listening. This was Jeff Dale, author of The Fine Art of Boxing, No Stooge in the Ring, and Everything Shemp on Foul Players Radio. And we will see you next time.
This podcast is part of the SJ Network. Go to s-j-network.com for more great podcasts and for contact information on publicist Steve Joyner.